Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporta. This is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, April 13th, 2014. This is episode 1074. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow and send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click the microphone, and enter Tech Guy. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Apple and Android devices are worth at Gazelle.com. And by LegalZoom. Visit LegalZoom.com to save on your legal needs and gain access to a network of legal plan attorneys for guidance. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your specific direction. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code TechGuy to receive $10 off at checkout. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, and all that jazz, digital photography. Yes, I'm your worst nightmare, a geek with a solid radio show. But that's okay. It's okay, because you don't have to be a geek to listen. In fact, all you have to do is just keep your ears open, and we'll talk about a lot of the things that, you know, you probably have to know about. I spent some time last show, but I'll talk again a little bit about Heartbleed. Everybody's covering this, and it's a big story. And I guess the first thing I would say is don't panic. Heartbleed was a bug that was discovered. It's ironic. This was the week, you know, we expected XP apocalypse. Windows XP reached end of life on Tuesday. Microsoft said, we're not going to patch it anymore. And I thought by Wednesday, there'd be, all these hacks and stuff. Not a thing, not a word, not a sign, not a sound. And ironically, the big story, and there's always a big security story, the big story of this week was about open source free software, a library called OpenSSL, which is used by, about two-thirds of the websites in the world. It's very widely used because it's very important because it's the software that guarantees the secure handshake, the encrypted conversation between you and your bank, e-commerce, your email. It's used very widely everywhere. Google used it, Twitter used it, Facebook used it, Yahoo used it. And unfortunately, a little itty-bitty bugs crept in about 2 years ago, submitted by a German person, I believe. There was some speculation that maybe this was an NSA plant. Of course, it could have been an NSA plant. Because it did allow the bad guy or, the spy guy to peer into the soul of the server and see what was in its memory. But if it was the NSA, it was not a very good choice. It's kind of a weak attack because, it's a strong attack in the sense that what would normally be a secure server is suddenly open to the world. But you can only fetch 64 kilobytes at a time of its memory and you can't specify what you want. So what Heartbeat did was allow a bad guy who knew about it, and we don't know how many knew about it, to just kind of ping the server over and over again, saying, give me another 64K of your memory. Let's see some more of your memory. Now, in the memory might be stored things like your login and your password, if you had just logged in. And maybe enough information. Yes, I think enough information for a bad guy to fake the server's certificate. And that's pretty serious. A lot of security experts said on a scale of 1 to 10, this security flaw is an 11. And one hopes that everybody has fixed this problem now. Certainly most of the big guys have. And I know whoever regulates banking in the United States told banks, you better fix it or you're in trouble. So the banks, I guess, will fix it. The banks don't want to talk about it, right? Banks never talk about any security flaws. They don't want to imply that those big iron vaults are somehow compromisable by some 18-year-old in Serbia. So, but they are, and they were. So what's the advice? Well, it's a, and I spent last night doing this. Change your passwords. It's kind of a pain. But what I would say is this is a good opportunity anyway for you to get a password vault, a password keeper. Everybody should be using one. Because that way, you know, if you don't, then you're tempted to use easy-to-remember passwords. You're tempted to use the same password on many sites. Both of these things are a bad idea. You really should. In anytime you have a password on a site where you want to keep that stuff safe, like your bank, your credit card, your email, you should have a long, like 16, 20 or longer character password that's completely random. Not your mother's maiden name and your kid's birthday, not your dog's name and your anniversary date. No, those are bad passwords. It should be a completely random mix of upper and lowercase letters, numbers, and punctuation, if the bank will let you. And as long as the bank will let you do it. But you can't remember that. You can stare at it all day. You can try to memorize it, and you can't. And that's good. The harder it is to remember, it just turns out, the better the password is. That's why you need a password vault. It will not only generate these very good, strong, random passwords, but it'll keep track of them for you. Then you only have to remember one password, and that's the password to the vault, right? The one I recommend people use, although there are many of them, and people have different favorites. The one I use is LastPass. It's free. There's a premium version you might want for $1 a month. It's cheap. It does everything right, including if you have been a LastPass user, telling you which passwords you have to change because of this Heartbleed bug. It'll actually do a security audit for you. It'll also let you know which sites, for instance, have duplicate passwords. Because, you know, a lot of my older sites do, because before I used LastPass, I was like everybody else. I want to remember this. Somebody used the same password. Not a good idea. So, get LastPass. It's easy. It works on every operating system, including all your mobile operating systems. And then change the passwords on the stuff you really want to keep safe. Bit by bit, you can change all your passwords. LastPass makes it very easy. It'll remember them. I know you can do this. I know it's complicated. And I know it's a pain in the butt. And we don't know, by the way, how risky it is not to do this. It may not be risky at all. But we just don't know. The attack leaves no trace. So anybody could be, you know, it's possible that somebody's known about this for 2 years and it's just been bleeding the memory dry of your Gmail server and has every password anybody's ever logged into Gmail over the last 2 years. It's possible, and we'd have no way of knowing. That's how bad this is. So change your password. Why not? It's not a bad thing to do. It's an opportunity to get LastPass or RoboForm or 1Password. There's a ton of these. KeePass. But LastPass is the one that I have vetted. My security guru, Steve Gibson, has vetted. They do everything right. That's why I recommend it. We know they do everything right. They, in fact, do everything so right. They were bit also by Heartbleed, as everybody else was. But because they don't have the information, they don't have the encrypted passwords to give away. There was no threat there. It was safe. And, like, that's a good sign. LastPass.com. Do that. Protect yourself. Don't panic. But over the next few days, I just spent a few hours last night changing the most important ones. It's a real pain in the behind to change your Google password because everything's using it. Or for me, it was. And now all my phones, and I have a lot of phones because I review them, and they all have the Google password, and they're all saying, I don't know, your password's no longer good. That's kind of good, right? That's a sign. You changed your password, kind of everything says, I'm not going to give you any information now till you log in properly. It's a nice thing. And a little bit of irony, I'm sure the folks in Microsoft, privately, nobody would in public admit this, but in private, they're probably going, yeah, it wasn't XP, was it? Your time, it's not too late. It still could come. What it reminds us, though, and the other thing I think is really important, it reminds us that when you use stuff on the internet, you're really operating in public. And there are good, strong ways to protect yourself and encrypt things, and you have to keep up on it. And if you want to use the internet and you want to use it to do things like buy stuff, you got to be careful. You got to be proactive. You got to pay attention to what's going on out there. Listen to this show. I'll let you know if there's something you need to know. The other side I should point out is that because of the banking laws, at least in the United States, you're not going to lose any money. Your bank is, you know, not going. Nobody's going to drain your bank account. The bank will cover that. Your credit cards are safe. Your ATM is safe. The thing I would most worry about, I mean, if somebody gets your Facebook password, that I guess that's bad. You should do things like attach a phone number to your Facebook and Google accounts. That way, if somebody changes the password, you can change it back by having them send you a text. And they, unless the guy steals your phone, you're probably safe. Things like that. Change your email password. That's probably the most important single one after your bank. 8888 Ask Leo. We could talk about it. Your turn, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, hungry like a wolf to eat all your data. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my phone number if you want to talk high tech. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada, but you can also call us from around the world. Just use Skype or something like that. And we'll hear you. And who will answer the phone? Why, this person right here, the phone ranger, Heather Hammond. Good morning, Heather.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good.
No, and you're not. No, you're not. We were both out late. I was listening to Duran Duran music for reasons I really don't understand. And you, what were you doing? You said you were going to go home early, go to bed, relax. It's a Saturday night. You're young. You're live. You live in San Francisco, the city that never sleeps. We built that city on rock and roll, didn't we?
Show did. Well, I did the cover band thing Friday night, so you're right. I was a little tired. I watched Muscle Shoals with my folks.
Oh, fun.
But
fun.
That in and of itself can keep
That's a rock and roll movie. Yeah.
Right. We're throwing back some red wine, and I made a special cocktail, and blah, blah, blah.
So welcome.
So extra makeup.
Both of us are moving slowly this morning. But my brain is on overdrive because I am ready to answer people's tech questions.
Faux show.
And when I say my brain, I don't mean my brain. I mean the chat room. Because
that little backup brain that you
that's
have
the backup
into
brain. Those folks in the chat room, I have been listening long enough. They know all the answers to all the questions. And all I have to do is I look down at the chat room. If you want to get in there, you can go to our website, techguylabs.com, and join the chat. And then help me, please. I am so lucky. This is so good. I've been doing this kind of a show, you know, a call-in tech show since the early 90s. And even then, we had a chat room because I always knew that it wouldn't be possible for me to answer every question. One person can't answer. Even then, 25 years ago, couldn't answer every question. But with the mass brain of 1,000 people in the chat room, certainly there is no question, and millions listening, there's no question we can't eventually answer. So fire away, Heather. Who should I start with here?
Well, I love it. I mean, I don't. It's a problem. But Bob in Yucaipa does think he may have the bug.
Oh, no. Line two. You may have heart bleed. Oh, no. Hi, Bob. How are you?
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
I could say almost certainly you do not have heart bleed, but go ahead.
Well, the symptoms are when I went on my computer this morning, I had all kinds of messages from Verizon saying that my data plan was way overdrawn.
Uh-oh. That's not good.
I went and looked, and I have a 20 gigabyte plan, and it was up to 35.
You have a 20 gigabyte cell phone plan. That's a big one. And you went to 35. That's a gigabyte a day. Overnight, 15 gigs. Yeah, that's not good. And is this on a tablet, a smartphone? What is it?
Well, it's a MiFi, and
you use it as your wireless as your internet access in your house.
Right.
See. All right. Well, that's so then that makes sense the higher cap because typically home internet people will use hundreds of gigabytes sometimes a month, especially
if you
watch Netflix or things like that.
No, we have to behave ourselves and not get carried away. But where we live, the phone service. Can't.
Yeah.
ESL.
No, MiFi is a good choice. Does it work well for you?
Yeah, it does until now,
Well, something on your system, it's not Heartbleed, by the way. Heartbleed is an attack that happens to servers, and you're not running a server in your house.
No.
Even then, it's only 64K at a time. I don't think it'd use 15 gigs overnight. So I think it's not, that's not what you need to worry about. I would worry about you know, some... Here's a couple of possibilities. It could be some application has decided to download the internet overnight. And this happens sometimes. I have an email client, and because I use Google Mail, I have many gigabytes of email stored. And every once in a while, a client just decides, let me download everything all at once. That'd use up some gigs. It may be, unfortunately, the other thing it could be is it could be that somebody has commandeered your network or your system and is using it themselves for other nefarious purposes. That's also
possible. Verizon says, of course, they say it's impossible for anybody to compromise my Wi-Fi.
Well, yeah, your Wi-Fi, yeah, but on the other end of that Wi-Fi, there's things called computers that are easy to compromise. So, right? So your Wi-Fi is serving those computers. If any one of the computers on your home network suddenly decided to go rogue, it would go through the Wi-Fi.
How do I tell?
Yeah, that's a good question. And unless you've been running logs, it's kind of hard to know what's doing all of that. Verizon could tell you if they wanted to be nice, because they do know, as your internet service provider, what kind of traffic was going on. They could tell you exactly what's going on.
I can look at the hour by hour, and the bulk of it started last night at 11 and ended this morning about 5.
Okay.
So but I don't know.
That's interesting. And you're saying it used 15 gigabytes in that six-hour period?
About 20.
Holy cow.
I mean, it was doing like 1.5 gigabytes an hour.
So let me ask you this question. How is your Wi-Fi secured? You've got a good password on it and all that?
Well, it's the password that Verizon gives you when you buy it.
Yeah, that might not be the best password. It is pretty random, though. It's numbers and letters and all that, right? It's on a sticker on the back of it.
It's pretty long, and it's capitals and lowercase.
Okay.
And
they generate a new one for every card. So unless they've got some, which, by the way, could be some flaw in how they generate those, or that database leaked out in some way, that's... You can change that, though, and it might be a prudent thing at this point to go into the MiFi and give it a new... What you want, two things. You want a new SSID, a new way it's identified. And make it something kind of generic, not doesn't say it's a MiFi, doesn't say where it is, so that it you know what it is. I use rock star names, Hendrix and Joplin and Morrison, but you could use Constellations, whatever. It's just something that you would say, oh, I know, that's my MiFi. And then change the password.
Right.
Just in case somebody has compromised you and is sitting outside your house BitTorrenting the entire Game of Thrones Season 2 or something.
So should I call them back and ask them if they can tell me more about that data that was taken?
Yeah, if they tell you, they may or may not tell you, but if they would, they could tell you exactly what kind of traffic it was. They could say, well, yeah, you were watching Netflix, or yeah, somebody was downloading files. What were your machines, how many machines were hooked up to it, what kinds of machines, that kind of thing?
Well, all I have are laptops and a couple tablets.
Was somebody watch? I mean, if you had Netflix on high quality for 6 hours, you might use something close to that.
No, it's just me and my wife, and we both went to bed.
And you didn't leave it running. You didn't start watching.
I didn't start anything.
You do watch Netflix?
No. It takes too much data.
Yeah, you can't.
I know better.
Yeah, you know. And how about, do you do streaming media of any kind, audio or music or anything?
Not really, because. I do on my phone because I have unlimited on my phone. But,
right. I suspect it's like, well, I don't know. I would see if Verizon would help you because they could tell you, you know, that was email, for instance. You need to figure out what program in your network was doing that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, our show today brought to you by ShareFile.com. We were talking before about sharing files. And, you know, a lot of people, I think in business, you know, almost all business emails these days have an attachment, whether it's a document or a presentation or maybe a spreadsheet or, you know, that kind of thing. And you've heard me say, do not send email attachments. This is how, you know, bad stuff gets spread around. But then every time I say that, somebody says, well, I'm in business. I need to send attachments. Well, that's why I've got ShareFile for you. Now, this was created by the folks at Citrix. They're really good. And they've really designed this for business users. It solves many problems. First of all, no more email attachments. You know I like that. You don't have to worry about bounce backs either. You know, some of these files are pretty big now, and a lot of email systems won't accept them. Maybe your email system won't even send it. Then, of course, there's the issue of security. When you send something through the internet, it is public. It is viewable. I don't care what disclaimers you put at the bottom of your email. I always laugh when I get emails from lawyers. This is a protected, privileged email. And despite the fact that we're sending it as a postcard throughout the internet, you better not read it. And then they say, oh, and delete it if you get it by accident. Yeah, right. That's going to make me read it. No, you should be using ShareFile. A lot of attorneys do. If you're in finance, SEC regulations may require a solution like this. Certainly HIPAA does for medical professionals. It is HIPAA compliant with regulations in many industries. I use ShareFile all the time to send audio files to radio stations. Here's my ShareFile account. Note a couple of things. First of all, this is my private page, but I've got the branding. You know, it looks like your site. When I want to share a file, radio stations are saying, you know, will you record a voice track for me? When I record a voice track, I can just send it to them. And this is important because I can't assume that they're geeks. So I check the file. I click send. I can create an email right here. They have an Outlook plugin that makes it easy. Or I can create a link. Let me just show you what I can do here. I can say email me when the item's been downloaded. I can require recipients to enter name and email if I wish. Download access. I can expire it never or after a day or anything in between. I can say how many times they can download it. So, you know, this is important in many industries. You want to say, you know, they can download it for one day, once, that kind of thing. And then I can send the file. And what I'm going to get is a secure link. Notice HTTPS. Yes, they're absolutely secure. Copy that to the clipboard, and I'll paste it in, and you'll see what they'll get. So they get this in their email. And what they see is very simple. Now, remember, I asked for an email, so I have to enter in this information. Then I can continue to the download page. There's a button. It's simple. It is not complicated. They don't have to create an account. I mean, this really is the way to do it. I love it. That's why I want to give you 30 days free. Visit ShareFile.com. At the very top, you see where it says podcast listeners. Click here. Click that. And enter in our offer code, TechGuy. 30 days free in your business. This is absolutely the best way to go. ShareFile.com. It's what I use and what I recommend. Bob is in our chat room, which is a good place to go for support and help. But I think your MiFi is haunted, and you need to get an exorcist. That's what you need to do. I figured it out. Jay in Providence, North Carolina, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, I'm having a problem with Twitter, and Twitter itself has been ignoring me since March 6th. And you may even have seen the problem if Heather was able to give you my Twitter handle.
No. So what's the problem?
Well, when I sign in fact, when the general public looks at it, whether they're signed in or not, if they just look at my Twitter account, it does not display most of the art. There's a lot of plain white, and there's a very wide, in fact, there's a full screen width green bar toward the very top, and I'm not able
to... So you're putting images on your... I don't understand. What's your Twitter handle?
It is the letter U followed by call that a tweet.
You call that a tweet?
Mm-hmm.
I like that. You call that a tweet.
I couldn't believe I was able to get it.
Okay, you know you're getting the new Twitter, by the way. Maybe that's part of the issue. This is the new Twitter, which looks just like Facebook. So you're complaining that you don't like this green header? Is that what it is?
Well, there's that, but they never really explained it to me. Also, I can't view my conversations the same way, at least.
Yeah, they've changed the Twitter interface. This is the new and highly controversial Twitter interface. It looks like Facebook. There's nothing wrong with it, as far as I can tell. This is how it looks. So, I'm not sure. I see your tweets. I see your images. Looks like a good account to follow. You got some good stuff in there. But as far as I can tell, it's completely normal. It's completely normal. Now, if you don't like it, one of the good things about Twitter is you can use a third-party Twitter client. I like TapBot's TweetBot, but there are many, and it depends on which operating system you're using. But if I look at you on, let me do that. Let me search Twitter for you. Call that a tweet. And see, now it looks all completely normal on this side because I'm not using Twitter. I'm using. So I guess my recommendation would be if you don't like how Twitter, the web page looks, you can try a third-party client. Twitter's changing the way they do things, and it's a little disconcerting. I guess the real issue is that they don't want third-party. They want you to use the web page because then they have better control of the advertising. And as you know, they're trying to monetize better. So yeah, you're probably disconcerted by the new look. That's the new Twitter. You're a lucky fella. you got the new Twitter. I wonder if I don't have the new Twitter. I have the old Twitter still on my page, on my site, Leo Laporte, whatever you call it, my account. But you have I have the old Twitter, and I could see how if you went from the old Twitter to the new Twitter, you'd go, what? But this is the new look. And you know what? Twitter's a private company. It's not a public utility. They can do anything they want, unfortunately. And apparently they want to be more like Facebook, which is kind of ironic because Facebook wants to be more like Twitter. Nobody's happy. Nobody's happy with what they've got. Brad in San Jose, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, Brad.
So I don't have heart bleed, but I do have heartburn from incessant robocallers. So I was doing some reading, and I read about FTC had a challenge last year that they put out for people to come up with solutions to count for countermeasures against robocallers.
Yeah.
And this guy created a website called No Mo Robo.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering. I've looked at it, and I'm interested in trying it, but the only thing about it is I'm wondering, is it really safe? You got to give them your phone number and. Is it, you know, and they're not, it's free, which is nice, but so, how are they going to make any money? So I'm just wondering, do you know anything about it? What do you think about it?
Yeah, I remember when this came out. And by the way, I mean, it did win the FTC's robocall challenge, so I have to presume the FTC vetted it. It's nomorobo.com. As I remember, what happens is it routes the calls through its own system before they get to you. And then it listens for a robocall, and it just kills it. Now, have you tried the Do Not Call registry?
Yeah.
And that's not working for you, huh?
Well, you know, the thing is that the people that are doing the robocalls, that's against the law in and of itself, as is, I believe it's also against the law to spoof your caller ID.
Yeah.
And I think the vast majority of robocalls that I get, which I do get usually on a typical day, I get one or two or three.
Oh, that's horrible.
They're
illegal. They're outside the country or, yeah. Yeah, you're right. This only the national registry only works with people who honor it. It's and if right. If you're outside the U.S. or you just don't care, then I've not tried No Mo Robo. As far as I know, it works. I don't get robocalls because I have an unlisted number. And while you have to pay the phone company for that, it seems to be fairly effective in stopping solicitors. Now, I just got a fairly new number, so I can't. Maybe in time they'll figure it out. And, of course, certainly some robocalls are random, where they just generate a random number. But I have not gotten – I do not get solicitors, solicitations, robocalls, or anything, and it's because I have an unlisted number. Would you consider that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a landline, I could do it.
That's what I did. And obviously, I have to have an unlisted number, or I'd get people calling me at home saying, my computer won't boot. But, I've always had an unlisted number, and that seems to help a lot.
The only thing that I've been reluctant to do it is because I'd have to change my number, wouldn't I?
No. No, you just pay 50 cents a month or whatever it is. It's probably more than that now. Mirth Girl says she's unlisted and she still gets 5 to 6 robocalls a day. So a number of people in our chat room still get robocalls.
Yeah, I mean, it comes in waves. There are some days that I'll get 3 or 4 or 5, and some of them, they just call over and over again. They'll call like every minute for like 5 minutes. It's really terrible. I mean, it's gotten to the point now where I don't answer the phone anymore. I just look at the caller ID, and if it's a number I recognize, I probably will answer it. But if it's an unfamiliar number, I just don't even answer it.
Yeah. So they're doing some, you know, you have to, before you can use Nomo Robo, you have to tell them what your carrier is, and they're doing something through the carrier. Yeah, I would guess it's some sort of routing through their system before it goes to you.
Yeah, I think the way it works is if you have a carrier that allows your calls to be ringing on multiple numbers.
Ah, that's it.
That's what enables it.
That's it. And so they ring your number and their number, but then they pick up quickly and hang up on the robocaller.
Yeah, and they use like a, you know, they have like a crowdsourced blacklist, I guess. And,
yeah. Boy, that's, it's so annoying. And it's illegal, and there's just, I guess there's nothing you can do about it. I don't see an issue, frankly, with doing this, especially since it's approved by the FTC. I haven't tried it. Let me see if there's anybody in the chat room who's tried it, and they can get. Yeah, there's somebody in the chat room says, yeah, it works. They've okay. used it. I see no problem with it. You know, I don't think they're malicious. Boy, it's terrible. I didn't realize it was such a widespread problem. People in the chat room are just going crazy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, 888-827-5536. It's not exactly a tech question, but boy, it really is annoying, isn't it? These unsolicited calls that make your landline less and less useful. Fortunately, there are alternatives. I think everybody should have a landline for emergencies. If the power goes out, there's a earthquake or something, it's good to have a landline because those will continue to operate. They're powered by the phone company. Don't get one that plugs into the wall, you know, not a powered phone, not a wireless phone, but just like a like an old-fashioned corded phone you plug into the phone jack and that's it. And I think it's a good idea to have that. But then most of us, you know, use our cell phones. You don't really need a landline anymore. I think a lot of younger people just don't do it. Except for that emergency situation. And then Google Voice is a great alternative to that. Google Voice has an anti-spam feature. Bless you, Google. Google, basically, their philosophy is nobody gets to advertise to you except us. So they block. They do a very good job blocking spam on email, and they do a good job, I think, on the Google Voice lines. So I use that. That's a free service, voice.google.com. And you get a, you know, it's an, I consider it a number for life, or at least the life of Google Voice service. Who knows how long they'll keep that. 8888 Ask Leo. Dave is in Fountain Valley, California. Hi, Dave.
Hey, good morning, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, thank you in advance for taking the call, and thank you in advance for solving my dilemma.
Okay.
I've got, let me pull up something here. Wrote down a couple questions ahead of time. I am looking for a solution for backup and encrypted backup. I've got two PCs at home. I use them for business and for personal. They both got two SSDs, one for the operating system, one for the data. And I'm looking for a way to encrypt all the data and also into an encrypted backup.
If you turn on encryption on the drive, and many drives you can do that, that's effective. That's as far as I know, there's no way around that. If you want to go even farther, there are good solutions for encryption. I like TrueCrypt, which is free and open source, TrueCrypt.org. Every operating system also has a drive-based encryption, Mac File Vault, Windows BitLocker. Those are also very good. But you've got to be a little careful when you do this. If you use even TrueCrypt, BitLocker, or File Vault, if you lose the password, you've lost your data. There's no recovery possible. And with BitLocker, with the Windows solution, it's even more complicated because it's a certificate-based encryption. So you have to make sure you back up the certificate. You don't lose it.
You know, but, leaning towards TrueCrypt, actually.
Yeah, TrueCrypt is a wonderful solution.
I'm getting some different feedback on whether to encrypt the operating system or just encrypt the data drive. What's your opinion?
Well, if you want to trust no one and do true, nobody can see my stuff, you have to encrypt everything. because the operating system stores information about you. For instance, the swap file has just kind of random memory data in it. And there's also slack space on the hard drive, space that was used by a file. The file's been released, but the operating system never erases that sector until it's reused. So the data just sits there and is available. So really, if you want to, what you're worried about is somebody snooping on you, you want to do full disk encryption on all your disks. That's basically it. And it'll do a good job for you. It's fast. Nowadays, encryption is so quick that you don't notice any penalty from doing it. There's no performance hit. So that's a good solution.
You won't be able to easily back that up if it's encrypted?
Well, yeah, it's just backing it up. I mean, backup is just backup. Now, if you're backing it up to a hard drive, you're going to encrypt the hard drive. All of these, when you log in, they're unencrypted. So as soon as you log into your account, or if you're using TrueCrypt, as soon as you unlock TrueCrypt, it's unencrypted. Now it's backing up just like a normal file to a hard drive, but that hard drive is encrypted. As soon as you shut down, it's unreadable. It's random data.
So I could still use a program like Acronis or something to do my backup, even though it's encrypted.
Oh, yeah.
It'll recognize the changes in the file.
That's right. Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Internally, it looks unencrypted. It's only to the bad guy after he gets steals your hard drive, that there's nothing there. There's garbage.
And what about cloud backup? If it's all backed up into TrueCrypt, if I try to use a cloud backup system?
Well, that's going to have the same thing because, okay, so let's say you're using Carbonite. You're running Carbonite. At the time you're running it, you're logged in. Nothing is encrypted. It's all visible. Carbonite will back it up unencrypted. So then if you want to do encryption, you'll have to use a solution. Carbonite offers this, but other companies do as well, that backs up your data on the cloud. Now, encrypts your data on the cloud. Carbonite will do that, and they do it, and this is how you want it, with what I call, or actually my friend Steve calls, trust no one encryption. That is, they don't have the password. Only you do. The drawback to that is some of the features that people use Carbonite for, like cloud storage, no longer work. For obvious reasons, your stuff is encrypted. But if you're truly paranoid, and I think it's probably the case that if you're storing stuff on the internet, you probably should be. That's where you should encrypt stuff.
Exactly.
Then you can do that. I'll give you an example. Dropbox. A lot of people use Dropbox, and they use it both as a backup and as a way of syncing hard drives. They have the key. They have the key. So that means a rogue employee could look at stuff. If the NSA comes a knocking, they're going to give it over. And now that Condoleezza Rice is on their board of directors, the woman who actually put together the as national security advisor, put together the surveillance government that we have, I think you probably could just safely assume that Dropbox will be very cooperative with government-to-government requests. So if you had stuff you didn't want anybody to see, Dropbox would be a bad choice unless you only synced encrypted files.
And can you use TrueCrypt with existing SSDs, or should those? Do you have to install TrueCrypt before you actually start to use them?
No, you can use it. You can turn it on any time.
I'll turn on any time.
The first time you do, though, it'll go as it churns through everything, encrypting it. SSDs, there's an argument that all SSDs should be encrypted because you cannot guarantee you a full erasure of SSDs. The way SSDs work is not the same as a spinning hard drive works. They do something to prevent a wear on any particular cell. They do something called wear leveling, which means the data is stored kind of randomly, and there isn't a good way to erase everything. So a lot of security folks say, there is no real secure erase for SSDs. That would be your smartphone, any solid-state drive in your computer. Those should probably always be encrypted before you even put anything on them, because once something's been on there, you can't guarantee it's been erased. Spider Oak, another good choice. Somebody's suggesting Spider Oak. That is trust no one encryption. There are a handful of these. In fact, Steve Gibson, my security guru, as I refer to him, did a show. I'll see if I can find the episode number on these cloud storage solutions and which ones had the keys, which means they could look at what your stuff is, and which ones didn't. And he specifically mentioned Spider Oak as one that doesn't. I think that's a good one. 8888 Ask Leo. Sam and Hayward, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Sam.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Great. So, yes, I built a replicator tower
What is a replicator tower? And I want one.
They're great.
Do they replicate food, cars?
No, audio, CDs, or DVDs.
Oh, okay. So it's a tower, what, you'll put a disc in and it'll replicate it?
Yeah, it's great. It's especially great if you're trying to, you know, if you have a small band and you're trying to get your music out there.
Ah, I get it. So like your Umphrey's McGee, you'd do a concert, and then as people are walking out the door, you hand out CDs of the show, that kind of thing.
If it's your own show, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, hang on a sec, because we've got to take a break for news. We'll be back, and I want to find out what's going on with your replicator tower. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, if you have an old gadget lying about the house, I've got a place to send it that you can actually get cash money, cash on the barrel head, for that old gadget. I'm talking gazelle.com. And you don't have to guess how much you're going to get. You can go there right now and get a quote. And furthermore, that quote is good for 30 days. So if you say to yourself, you know, I'm thinking of replacing this tablet. Well, I'll give you an example. We're waiting. We think sometime soon Google will come out with a new Nexus 10. We're not sure, but we think. Well, you wouldn't want to, you know, sell the Nexus 10 right away based on the old one, based on the fact that Google might have a new one. But you might want to get the quote right now, because I can tell you, it ain't gaining in value over time. So you can go in there and you say, well, I got that Nexus 10. How much does that there thing work? $111. Now, you're going to lock that in, okay? It's like adding it to your press the get paid button. It's kind of like adding it to your grocery basket. And then you can continue to go through items. They'll buy broken iPhones and iPads because, you know, anything that has a resale value, right? They'll buy cell phones from Apple, BlackBerry, HTC, LG, Motorola, Nokia, Samsung. Tablets from Amazon and Asus and Google and Microsoft. And yeah, you could sell your old Surface and get the new one. Go to gazelle.com and find out what your old stuff's worth. I tell you right now, sitting in the drawer, it's not worth anything. But if you go to Gazelle, you get it together. They pay, by the way, once you check out, they will send you a box prepaid with the correct postage and everything. And so you don't have to pay postage on anything worth more than a buck. If you forget to I always say wipe the data before you send it, but if you forget or you can't, don't worry, they'll do it. And then they'll send you a check, or you can get a PayPal credit, or an Amazon gift card. And if you spend a lot of money on Amazon, I highly recommend getting that, because they'll bump that up 5%. I have to say, Gazelle is fantastic. I want you to try it today. Gazelle, gazelle.com. Join the 700,000 customers so far who've been paid more than $100 million, including me. I love Gazelle. You bet I send stuff to Gazelle all the time. Actually, we have a company, Gazelle. Like, we just periodically go through stuff and put a box together. Gazelle, gazelle.com. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and all that jazz. Smartphones, you bet. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. of A and Canada. Otherwise, you know, you can call from anywhere in the world. Just use Skype or some solution like that. It won't cost you anything. Now, we were talking to Sam in Hayward about his replication tower. Hi, Sam.
Hey, Leo.
So, yeah. So you use this because, are you in a band?
A friend of mine is. A few friends of mine. So I built it to help them out.
You used to be able to buy these in the early days of CDs. You know, you'd put a CD, a master CD in one drive, and then it would just spew out. Sometimes they have 8 burners in it, and they just spew out discs.
Yeah, the one I built has 7 burners. And what happened was, last week, I was doing a burn. In the middle of the burn, it shut down, came back on, the trays came halfway out, went back in, shut down, and I haven't been able to get it back on since.
Wow, that's a failure right there. That's like, that's the thing saying, I give up.
There's only 3 main components to a tower like that. It's the power source, the control bar, and the burners. I've already replaced the power source.
That was the first thing I would have said, is power supply failure, right? And you replaced that.
Yeah. And I last night, I got the new control bar in. I replaced that. Nothing. The only thing I haven't replaced are the burners and the cables. And I can't figure out why.
Seems like it wouldn't be them.
Yeah.
So it doesn't power up. What happens now? It just doesn't turn on?
It just sits there. It's a paperweight. Yeah, not even the cooling fans come on.
Hmm. And you replace the power supply, because, again, this sounds so much like a power supply failure.
Yeah, I not only have I replaced the power supply, I've tried three different power supplies in case the power supply was bad.
Now, I presume there's a processor in here somewhere.
No, there isn't.
Of course there is.
Well, yeah, in the control bar.
I mean, it's not a mechanical machine.
There's a processor in the control bar.
Yeah.
But I got the new control bar.
You replaced that. You completely replaced that.
Yes.
Well, I don't know, because I don't need baffling me. You've replaced everything. You've checked the power cord.
I've checked the power cord. I've checked the outlet where I plugged the power cord into.
Well, okay, so you've replaced the motherboard, or what you call the motherboard. Yeah, that's the motherboard, the control thing, the control strip. Uh-huh. You've replaced the power supply. You've checked the outlet. You've checked the cable. The only thing you haven't done is the drive. Now, I guess the drive cables I would check. You know, I had a system where I accidentally, in the old days when you could do this, I had attached the IDE cable flipped, and the thing wouldn't start up. And I'm flipping around the cable, fixed it. If I was lucky, I didn't burn out something. But I'm wondering if that's it. Are there any fuses in that thing?
No, I've looked for fuses. No, this thing's all—it's all SATA cable.
Yeah, SATA, you can't do wrong.
Yeah.
But maybe you have some bad cabling. I get. I mean, well, all you can do is so. I mean, I don't have a solution. Obviously, you're sitting there and touching the thing. I'm 1,000 miles away, thinking about it. As big as my brain is, and I include the 1,000 people who are in our chat room, I don't know if we can come up with a solution by remote control. But you're doing what you do. When you troubleshoot something, you work through it one by one, and you always replace or fix the easiest thing first, the cheapest thing. So I would start with the power cable, make sure that the cord's okay. That's okay. The plug's okay. Well, I guess next we do the power supply, because this feels like a power supply failure, especially the fact that it went, and the drawers came halfway out and they sucked back in. That sounds like, you know, maybe a logic board failure. You should replace that. No, it's not. Nothing's working. Basically, once you replace the SATA cables and the burners, you might as well have just bought a whole new unit. The only thing left is the case. So I don't know. Maybe the power, somebody's saying the power switch might be burnt out. Might be the case, right? Might be the case. Wow, I can't give you much help other than say continue to replace items until it works. Or as HAL 9000 said in the movie 2001, I suggest we put the unit back into operation and let it fail. Sorry, Dave. Dave in Salt Lake City, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Dave.
Hey, Leo, how's it going?
It's going well, Dave.
Good. I don't have to look at you with a creepy red eye or anything, do I?
If you never saw the movie, and I bet there's some young people who haven't, they're going, did Leo just lose it? What happened? Is he in a fugue state? Yes, Dave.
I'm sorry, Leo. I can't do that right now.
Okay, Dave, what can I do for you?
I got a nasty gram the other day from Google.
Uh-oh.
It seems that on one of my websites, I've used a term which I'm not going to say on the radio because they find it offensive.
Really? They said they're censoring you for a word you used?
Yeah, it's because of AdSense. They don't want this word.
They can't. You can't say it. Yeah, you have to be careful about. So you have ads on your site from Google. And what they're trying to avoid is something called click fraud. So advertisers pay for people seeing those ads and clicking on them. And what they don't want is somebody to kind of somehow, you know, and people do this all the time, you know, the obvious simple trivial way would be just for you to go to your site and click the ads a bunch of times. And that they figure that out pretty darn quick. But they're also, you can't incent people to click it many times. I don't know what the word is, but... yeah, just take it off. You have to do what they say.
Okay, well, here's the deal. You know the Internet Movie Database, right?
Yeah, IMDb.
Okay, well, my site's pretty much like that, only it deals strictly with cartoons.
Oh, neat.
This, the specific word is the name of that cartoon.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you should appeal this then. You should appeal this.
There's no way. There's.
I know. I know. Who are you going to talk to at Google? You get a Python script. Yeah.
That's why I'm calling, because I'm and this is endemic with Google. They seem to think that computers can rule everything.
Yeah. No, and this is a problem because they do rely. They've got a lot of people using their service. They can't hire enough people to do this. They automate it. And
they're a big company. They should have an email.
They do. The webmaster, the Google webmaster site you can go to and a person will help you.
I can do that.
Yeah. Just go to the Google webmaster site and they my friend Matt Cutts, I actually know the guy who's responsible for fighting spammy links on Google. If it's google.com/webmasters, they have tools, and you can absolutely contact them and say, hey, look, this isn't an attempt to get more clicks. This is the name of a cartoon. I mean, I guess if you can't get anybody, you could replace the word with asterisks or something, but that is annoying, isn't it? That is really annoying.
Yeah, and it's, you're trying to be truthful with what you're presenting to people. And
No. I think that's completely, what you're saying is completely fair, and they absolutely will understand this. They're cartoon fans over there.
Cool.
You just have to go to the right people. There is an AdSense appeal process. In fact, we're going to put a link in the show notes to the invalid activity appeal.
Thank you.
Yeah, Lee. It's all done automatedly, but a human is at the other end, and eventually they'll help you out. You kind of understand why. It's so big, it is hard to talk to a human at Google, but they have to. This is a case of them having to service. I get every once in a while, in fact, probably a couple of times a week, I get emails from somebody who spammed our website. They created an account and they put spammy links, ads for their site on there. And then they got a message from Google saying, you've got a lot of spammy activity linking back to your site. We're going to delist you. And they panic and they send me an email saying, can you take those links down? And it gives me great pleasure indeed to say no. You spam me, you live with it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. It turns out Google has a phone number. If you go to google.com/contact, you can actually call a phone number. I don't know what happens. Hello, this is Google. Leave a message. I don't know. Maybe there's people there. They have like 58,000 employees. Rich in East Point, Michigan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo.
Hello, Rich. Hello. How are you?
Hello, Leo.
Hello, Rich.
I'm doing well.
Good. What can I do for you, my friend?
I just got to say it's a beautiful day today. We've had a long, hard winter.
Haven't we?
Near Detroit, Michigan.
It got down into the 50s here in Northern California, and I was freezing.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
How bad was it in the Motor City?
Oh, my God. We went for like a couple months with temperatures without even the wind chill below zero, like every day. It was horrible. And snow, the second snowiest winter in record. Yeah. So it was rough.
It got pretty breezy here for a few weeks.
It's breezy here today. It's 73.
Oh, how nice. Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
See, the one advantage of having a crappy winter is that when spring arrives, you really appreciate it.
Boy, do you ever.
Yeah.
I'm not going to complain about the heat, even if it goes past 90 all summer. I'll live with it.
Sure. I hear in Iceland they all run around naked all summer because it's been so cold that they throw their clothes in a bonfire and enjoy the weather. What can I do for you?
Well, one thing I just wanted to let you know, in CNN Money, they had an article about passwords you should change.
Yeah.
Some you should not change.
Well, no, there's never an advice. Nobody ever says you shouldn't change a password. It's always a good idea to change your passwords once in a while. You don't need to.
Several,
yeah.
Yeah. But there's several that weren't affected by this.
That's correct.
Please.
That's correct.
Amazon's one of them, and my bank of America.
Oh, that's good. I didn't know bank. You know, mostly those will be people who use Microsoft's internet server instead of the open source Apache or Nginx servers. Those people have their own SSL plugins from Microsoft and are not affected. So if you're, that's a significant number. I mean, it's not everybody.
Right.
And the other thing is there's no point in changing your password if they haven't fixed the flaw.
Exactly. And they list, well, in their list, they only have one. So I obviously this list will be changing, but one of them is American Express. So don't even bother changing it because they haven't even fixed the situation.
Wow.
Yet.
It's more complicated than it appears to figure out if a site was bit by it or not. And the problem is that financial institutions, and I would include credit cards like American Express in this, really don't want to undermine your trust by saying, oh, by the way, we've had a problem. Would you please change your password? The banks don't want to do that. And then what they'll do is they'll just eat the loss. If you get hacked, they'll just eat the loss. So I'm surprised that Amex hasn't fixed it. I'm not sure. I would say CNN has it right for sure. It's very difficult to tell, first of all, if a company was using the server and the software that caused the problem, because most companies obfuscate, that is, you know, hide or scramble the response. What server are you using? They don't want the bad guy to know that either. So they don't necessarily respond truthfully when your browser queries them. So there's really no good way to test this. If a company doesn't want to reveal it, we're just guessing. We're in the dark.
Right. So I just thought it was a good article just to see which ones are.
I'm really glad. For the most part, the mainstream media has responded responsibly and well to this and given people good information. I think the only thing I would say is that, this is a great story. And of course, we know that the more sensationalistic it is, the more views you're going to get, the more ratings you'll get. So all media sometimes overstates the problem. At this point, there isn't any evidence that any big breaches have occurred. They may have, and it's certainly a serious flaw, but we don't know.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hey, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Did you have a question?
Yeah, I did have one question. I bought this Asus T100T, it's a tablet with a attachable, detachable keyboard. And I'm really enjoying the thing, and it's great. And the flaw that I have is the size of the drive that it came with. 32 gigabytes is all it has. And it does have a spot to add a micro SD chip, and I'm going to get myself a 128 gigabyte chip to add to it.
Okay.
My question is, can it combine it somehow in the system so it appears as one drive? Or is that, and if I can, is that even a good idea?
You can. In fact, I have a use on my Mac Pro, I use a SSD external drive enclosure. And it has, because SSDs, these solid state drives, tend to be small, it has two drives combined together using RAID 0 to make it look like one larger drive. The only issue in that is it does raise the failure rate, because if either one of the two drives fails, the whole thing fails. So it's what we call scary RAID. But it does give you the advantage of looking like one larger drive.
Now, how about if I left it as two drives and installing, because I need to install more programs. I can't fit anything more in it right now. If I want to install more programs, I can install them into a directory on that second drive, correct?
That's right. Well, yes. You're using Windows? Yes and no. Windows installations, you don't usually get the option to put applications where you want. They want to go where they go, and usually it's right next to Windows on the same drive. So, no, generally speaking, in Windows, you almost always install on the C drive. So what I use a second drive for is data. It is a good idea to separate your data from your operating system and applications. It's very hard to separate your applications and operating system. I used to try to do that, and I gave up. It's just, and the application mixes a lot of data into the operating system anyway through the registry and things like that. So most of the time, consider what your Windows install to include applications. That's one big blob. And if you're going to reinstall Windows, you're going to reinstall all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was just, my problem is that I just don't have any more, really.
You're running out of space, yeah. So I get a bigger internal drive. I mean, this is a common problem. In fact, back in the days when you'd get a drive pre-partitioned because the operating systems couldn't handle those big drives, those 4-gig drives, we couldn't handle them. So we'd divide them into two 2-gig drives. And then you'd run out of room on one, but there'd be a ton of room on the other. And then you go, what do I do now? So it's not unusual. And this is another thing that seems to happen with solid-state drives. They tend to be, you know, more costly per gigabyte. So people put smaller drives in, and then they run out of room. Really, the only thing you can do is make a bigger drive. That's really pretty much how what you have to do. Now, since it's a tablet, you're kind of stuck. You can't put your own drive in there. So the only you can add more space by having an external drive or using an SD card or whatever you're doing, but you can't add more space for applications. Now, if it's not Windows, if it's something like Android, then there are in some limited cases you can move your applications onto the external drive. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I can't make you listen to that jazzy music. It's so happy. Brought to you by LegalZoom.com. You know LegalZoom. I hope you know LegalZoom. There are a lot of things you can do, like start a business, that don't require the hiring of expensive attorneys. Use LegalZoom. That's what I did when we started Twit in 2005. It was just me. It's just me. I did ask Kevin Rose, and I said, what should I do? And he said, you should make an LLC. So I did it online with LegalZoom.com because it was affordable. It was $99 to create that. And by the way, I still have that LLC. It's still how we run. We're still Twit LLC. If you want to do a Chapter S or C Corp, also $99. LegalZoom, it's not a law firm. They give you self-help services at your specific direction so they can help you do the things you need to do. You don't need a lawyer for it, like trademarks, wills, trusts. If you do want an attorney, they've pre-negotiated prices, very affordable flat rate prices, with an attorney or attorneys in your state. And you can get legal help through those independent attorneys, which is great. Happens sometimes you'll have a question, you know. For instance, should I do a Chapter S, a Chapter C, an LLC? This would be a good time to start your business, protect your family. Do the things you've been putting off at LegalZoom.com. It's very affordable. You'll get the personal attention you need, and they'll help you take care of all the details. LegalZoom. They've been helping families and small business owners for 14 years. An A-plus from the Better Business Bureau. You know they're good people. Call or visit LegalZoom.com today. Do use the offer code TechGuy when you check out. That'll let them know you heard it on the TechGuy podcast. And they'll give you $10 for your trouble. LegalZoom.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. No Chris Marquardt this week. He's teaching a workshop. Sorry to say, but he'll be back. Don't forget that our assignment. What is our assignment? I forgot.
I totally can't remember. It was flat, but we've moved on, right?
Yes.
So probably bumpy.
No, if I go to Flickr, I could find out.
Okay.
Flickr, if you're on Flickr, join the Tech Guy group. And then if you like to take pictures, and this isn't a contest, it's just for fun. But if you like to take pictures, every month Chris gives us an assignment. And let me see, because Renee will usually write this on the website, what the assignment is. Current assignment is flat. So you want to make a flat. Yeah, it's still flat.
Oh, it is. Okay,
yeah.
Good.
So somebody's flattened a beer can, and that's actually a beautiful picture.
It is.
So here's the deal. You take an image. It's just an excuse to get out there and photograph stuff. Take an image illustrating the word, the concept, the idea, flat. We don't know what it means. You decide what that means. And then upload it to Flickr. You can upload as many as one picture every week. Chris will pick three, and when he comes back in a couple of weeks, we shall review flat photos. 8888 ask Leo. That's the number. So, Rich, I think I misunderstood your call, so I want to bring you back just a second. You have this Asus. Is it an Android tablet?
No, it's Windows 8.1.
That's what I thought you said. That's what I thought. The chat room was saying, oh, no.
Now, this is the Asus. It's a T100T, and it's a tablet, but it's got the keyboard you can attach
right.
to it.
But because it's a tablet, you can't easily upgrade the storage.
No, I know that.
Yeah, so I think you're kind of, once it runs, how much was it?
It was $329.
No, I mean, how much storage? That's a good price.
It's only got 32
yeah.
gigabytes.
See, that's 32 gigabytes for Windows 8 Pro. Ain't a lot.
Yeah.
I think it'd be, you almost have to treat that as it is what it is. You know, it probably comes with Office, and you can't really install more than that. Something to be aware of, really, when you buy a tablet is it's not really upgradable in terms of internal storage. That's how much you get. That's how much you'll have. Tommy, Birmingham, Alabama. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, how are you?
I'm well. Apparently, Windows 8 does have a storage spaces capability in the control panel that will let you install apps externally. So that maybe they've improved that in Windows 8. What can I do for you, Tommy?
Leo, long-time listener. Thanks for taking a call.
Thank you.
In fact, Bob called in earlier about his leading Wi-Fi with the bandwidth.
Yeah,
and I was wondering if he left the laptop on with a new Dropbox or Carbonite account.
Exactly.
Load.
Sure. Exactly. Yeah, it could be if you had set up Dropbox or you'd set up a Carbonite or something that was sending a lot of data up, especially if a new account. Same thing if you set up your email for the first time and it decided to download everything and you have a big email box, then it could.
Well, here my question's related. I have a MacBook Air mid-13, you know, the later MacBook Air, and I guess I'm one of many on the Apple support forums that are having some battery issues. And my, battery is touted the last 10, 12 hours, and, you know, I'm lucky if I get 9, I guess, but...
Well, 9's not bad. Remember, they are. It depends on the company. Apple's pretty good about saying how much life they have and being fairly accurate, but it depends heavily on how you use it.
Well, and here's the question, because there were a lot of people, and myself included, that were getting on the little indicator icon on the dashboard 3 to 4 hours for the full charge.
Right.
And I had a Carbonite account that I had put on it, and I noticed when I turned off that Carbonite account, that reading went back up to a normal battery.
That makes sense. That could be. Carbonite tries hard to be what they call nice. That's actually a technical term, literally, for a program that doesn't eat too many CPU cycles, but it also extends, in the case of Carbonite, to not using too much of your upstream bandwidth. If they used it all, you wouldn't be able to download anything. And I would presume they also try not to kill your battery, but maybe not. And an initial backup, if it's got a lot of data to send up to the cloud, it's going to be chugging along. Mostly, the problem is it won't let your computer go to sleep.
And if you're in power nap mode at night with it not not plugged in, I guess it would come on and continue to do its thing.
It shouldn't, but maybe it is. And I would contact Carbonite and ask them. I guess the hard drive would stay spinned up, right?
Right.
Yeah, so that might use some of it.
But here's my question. The little indicator, percentage indicator or hours indicator that's on the menu bar.
Yeah.
Is it giving you the actual time remaining on the battery?
No, it doesn't know.
The time remaining based on the CPU activity that's taking place at the time.
It's giving it you its best guess based on previous usage.
Gotcha.
So that's why your battery indicator gets a little bit more accurate over time because it has more data. And it may go up and down. And I find that it's pretty variable. And it's not necessarily 100% accurate. I wouldn't use it as a measure of what you're going to get, for instance.
It seems like the longer you sit there in the battery mode, the longer your battery life.
Yeah.
Although there's a, obviously a place where they cross because you're using the battery.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's just a general idea. And I do believe what they do is it gets some training. It gets better over time as it kind of sees usage patterns. And of course, it does watch. I'm sure it watches activity, and if it sees the CPU's pegged at 100, 100%, it's going to say, well, that can't last long based on my previous experience of the CPU lasting 100% and the current drain and how much I think I have left. But it's all a guess. And then, you know, it'll go back up again if the CPU's turned down. I think mostly it's saying if things continue as they are right now, it isn't good. Something like that. It's a good question. I think of it as a ballpark figure. I don't generally know. Now, percentage you could probably use accurately. If it says 50% is left, that you can trust. Because that doesn't say how long that 50% will last you. It's going to vary depending on how you use the computer. But you know, I've got half left. And then you can say, based on how I've been using it, that means maybe 5 hours, 4.5 hours. But the guessing is I think, a pretty ballpark as to how long left. Randy, Hermosa Beach, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Randy.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Second time listener, first time caller.
Wow, you wasted no time, and I like that.
Well, I just found you. I really enjoy your program.
Thank you.
You got a new listener.
Wow, wonderful.
I am an amateur photographer, meaning I just take a bunch of picture of my kids. And in my collection, I actually got one that we've gotten some really great comments on, and the wife wants to blow it up as big as possible, even bigger than a poster size. recommending a service using an iPhone 5S, you know, it's got a pretty good...
Yeah, but you're going to, no matter, no service can make it look, can give you data that's not there. And so camera phone is only going to record a certain amount of data. The 5S is 8 megapixel, I believe. So that's
right.
That's a lot of megapixels. That's a lot of detail. Certainly, you could go 15, you know, 14 by 19 or something like that without looking too grainy. But the bigger you get it, the more you're going to see defects in the shot. And it's just the way it is. I would use the service built into the iPhoto. Apple's service is very good. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. Ginny in Cypress, California. You're next. Hi, Ginny.
Hi.
Welcome.
Hi. My question is, I have a daughter that's about to turn 12, and she is interested in a video camera or like a camcorder just for fun, like for taking creative videos of her and her friends and things like that.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah, and she has an iPhone, so she can take video on that.
She has probably one of the best video devices out there.
Okay. Well, her deal is I think she just wants to be able to do maybe longer portions of video. You know, it's limited on, I guess, on storage is what.
Not really. The biggest, well, no. She may be because she, and I noticed this right. With the young people, she may have 1,000 photos on her iPhone.
Exactly.
She should start pulling stuff off, connect it up to a computer and start pulling stuff off.
Okay.
But you can usually record minutes. The real issue on the iPhone is you don't have Zoom.
Right.
That's about the only feature. And, you know, I noticed that the camcorder market is dying, at least among consumers, because we all carry smartphones that have, you know, video in it. And here's what I would do. If you want Zoom and you want better photography, get her an inexpensive point and shoot, not a camcorder.
Right. But like a camera where she can have
exactly
video capabilities.
Because these cameras now, these point and shoot cameras have excellent high def video.
Right.
You know, they have cards, so you put a card in and, you know, you can shoot hours.
Right.
Tell, you know, she's, one of the things she's going to want to learn is not to shoot anything longer than, say, 6 seconds. Because people tend to shoot an hour of video. Nobody wants to sit there and watch an hour of shaky cam video.
Exactly.
Shoot little snippets and edit together. But this is an opportunity for you to teach her how to edit. Right. You know, does she have a computer, access to a computer?
Yeah, she does.
So she can edit it. She has do you have a Mac? Or Windows?
We have both.
Okay. So the Mac has iMovie, which is a really nice tool.
Right. So, and she really hasn't explored that much yet.
Yeah. This is a good thing. I'd encourage it. And it's nice for her to have a still camera. I'll tell you what I recommend, especially for younger people, the Olympus TG2. They just released the TG3, but this is a tough camera. So you can drop it. You can kick it. It's dust proof. It's waterproof.
Okay.
You could shoot underwater with it.
the Olympus TG2.
They just came out with the 3. I don't think it's available yet. They just announced it. But the TG2 is good. Actually, that means the price will drop on the TG2. We're talking around $300.
Okay.
Great video. Great video. And it has Zoom, so she can Zoom in and all of that stuff.
Okay. Well, good. I will investigate that and appreciate your input.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think she'll enjoy that. It's a good thing for a 12-year-old. Get her into something, you know, creative. You never know. I mean, my kids, I tried to get them into video, and they weren't interested. I tried to get them into audio because I'm a, you know, radio guy. They weren't interested. So, just, you know, you give them opportunities to try stuff. You never know. This TG2 is great. I've taken it into the swimming pool and actually taken pictures underwater. Does a great job. I'm really love this little camera. In fact, my daughter, who is in Mexico right now for a couple of months studying Spanish, she's 22. She's not a 12-year-old, though she acts like one. But she has the TG2. She said, of course, the like hour before she takes flight. Hey, Dad, you have a camera I could take? I scrambled around. I said, this one is a perfect one. Perfect one to take with you. But there are a number of these devices. The iPhone has Zoom in the sense that you can, as you're shooting a video, zoom in. But it's not optical zoom. It's digital zoom. It takes the picture and blows it up. And so it really starts to look pretty bad pretty quickly. iPhone's okay. And I'm telling you, the reason people don't buy camcorders anymore is because we all carry camera phones that have great video. But if you want to go to the next step a little bit better with higher quality zoom, better quality images, I think one of these point and shoots, this Olympus TG2, is great. Really nice. Mary, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mary.
Hey, Leo. Got a question for you, and also a big thumbs up on LastPass, but let me ask my question.
Sure.
I've got Earthlink, and on their site, we've been down, the servers have been down for about 3 days now.
What?
You look on their outages, and it's many, many area codes in Los Angeles, certainly including mine.
That's terrible. For 3 days?
Well, yeah, lots of call-ins.
Yeah, I bet. I'd be a little miffed.
Yeah, they offer us dial-up, but...
I'd be honest, I'd be shaking. 3 days without the internet? What?
Well, you know, there's the iPad, but, you know...
And what good is dial-up? Who has a modem anymore?
Well, yeah, and who has even a phone connection for
the internet? I don't even have a landline. What are you... dial-up? Welcome to the 21st century. Wow, I am shocked. That's terrible.
Earthlink DSL. So I just wondered if you heard of that and
I have now.
Could this be Heartbleed on the servers?
No, but
the servers that are down.
Yeah, I mean it could be that they're trying to update, but it doesn't take that long. It's a very simple upgrade. It sounds like something more serious has happened. 3 days is a very long time. 3 hours. Would be a long time, although not unheard of, you know, when you bring your servers down for maintenance. So what happens when something like this happens is cascading failures. They changed something and it broke something else, which broke something else, and now the whole thing collapsed. It must be a mess.
It must be a mess. You go on the outages page on Earthlink's site, and it's one California region.
I think it's time to get a new service provider.
Yeah, you got any suggestions?
Yeah, well, we have a sponsor. DSL Extreme is very good.
Right?
In your area, there are many choices. The phone company owns the copper, but the Federal Communications Commission requires them to allow other companies to use it. And that's a good thing because it means there's competition. There's SonicNet, there's DSL Extreme, there's Earthlink. There's a lot of companies sitting on your phone company's copper. Of course, your phone company also offers service, I'm sure. They make it hard to change because even though they're required by law, they can go kicking and screaming. The law does not prevent that. So, for instance, changing DSL providers, if it's not to your phone company, sometimes can cause outages of weeks. of weeks. So what I would do is contact a third-party DSL company and say, can you move me from Earthlink, and how long will it take?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, and don't do it unless they say it can do it right away. Boy, I'm sorry. I'll check into this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. It's time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, smartphones, all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. of A. or Canada. Outside those areas, of course, you can always call using Skype, and it won't cost you anything. To Long Beach, California we go. Rick is on the line. Hi, Rick. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. I wanted to ask you, once or twice a year, I take my computer either to a computer tech guy or Geek Squad to clean it up to make it go faster, and they always tell me they cleared problems. Is that a software program that I could buy that could do the same thing?
No, in fact,
like that once.
They may be using something like CCleaner or something. There really isn't this isn't necessary. The best way to clean up a computer is a lot of work, which is to reinstall everything, you know, to erase the hard drive and start over. There isn't any magical software you can run that will somehow make it faster, despite the ads you may have seen on television, despite what
there's like PC-matic, they have the ads, and I've just been going to Geek Squad.
So it's all snake oil. It's not real. It's snake oil. So here's what they do. They run a registry cleaner. I don't recommend it. Very bad idea.
Really?
Because if either the registry cleaner does nothing, in which case it's harmless,
right.
Or it's aggressive, in which case things may well stop working.
Oh.
Your registry does not need to be cleaned. It is not a picture window. It doesn't need a yearly cleaning. Similarly, they may optimize the disk. This used to be a thing back when operating systems weren't too bright. They'd get the disk all messed up. That's not a thing anymore. Not needed. What they could perhaps do is empty, and CCleaner will do this. You can get CCleaner. This is probably what they use from Piriform, PIRIFORM.com. And it will also clear out the temp files. It feels good, but a computer is not your garage. It's generally not a good idea to clean it up. If you really want, if things really feel sluggish, and they will after a few years, the best thing to do is to start over and not install all the stuff that you installed over the last 3 years until you need it. Reinstall is, and I do this a lot. I do not do the cleaning stuff. It is not. Now, if you want to clean the inside, like get the dust out, that's good.
No.
But the digital world is not completely analogous to the physical world. And the idea that you need to do spring cleaning isn't really quite true, in my opinion. Now, this may be a somewhat controversial opinion. I will get people who will send me emails. Oh, no, Leo, I had a computer. It was very slow, and I brought it, and they did this kind of clean very much fast. But it's not. It's not. It's voodoo. It doesn't really.
Really?
Yeah.
But I got another question for you. Do you have a website with past stuff that I could look at?
We do. It's a very complete site, I think, techguylabs.com. We put show notes from every show there, and that's pretty complete. We do the question and answer, and in fact, it's divided up show by show, and then within the show, hour by hour, then within the hour, question by question. So you can go directly. For instance, your question will be there. It'll say, Rick from Long Beach, how do you clean up a computer? You'll see not a transcription, but a description of what your question and my answer were. But then you can also, after the fact, we put audio and video up so you can listen to it and watch it. And you can even comment on it. And there's a search feature on the engine. All of this is free, by the way. And the idea is that over time, I think it will get more valuable. You know, for instance, if people, instead of sending me emails saying you're wrong, Leo, would go to the website and comment and say, well, I use CCleaner and I got a lot of benefit. That's fine with me. I'm not going to delete that comment, even if I disagree with it. I want to get those opinions in there because then you, as the user, can judge and say, well, Leo said it doesn't do anything, but here's a guy who says it does. And that, I think, makes it more valuable. So techguylabs.com.
Excellent. All right. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling. I think it's a little profit center for the Geek Squad. They make a little money on the side. You know, there may be things that they can fix. For instance, I do recommend uninstalling programs. It's not a bad idea to periodically go through your program and features control panel, and if you see stuff that you don't use anymore or stuff you didn't put there in the first place, uninstall it. You don't need it. And that will speed things up. But I just, you know, something like a registry cleaner can't be useful, or it would be dangerous. One of the reasons people recommend CCleaner is because it's pretty judicious about what it cleans up. The theory is that as you've installed programs over time, your registry, which stores things like program settings, may have stuff left over in it from programs you removed and weren't fully removed, or may have items in it that are no longer useful. And so a registry cleaner could, in theory, scan through the registry and say, well, you don't have this program anymore. I'm going to delete this. There are two problems with this. First of all, if it deletes something you need, that can cause problems, real problems. The computer cannot boot. So it has to be very careful about what it deletes. Second of all, the real problem is, what's the point? A large registry isn't slowing you down. It's taking up space on your drive, but not a huge amount. Drives are big. Computers are fast. If your registry has gotten so big that it's slowing down your computer, there's another problem. I wouldn't worry about it. I really wouldn't. Most of this stuff, because over time Windows and Macintosh have gotten to be better and better operating systems, most of this stuff is handled automatically. John is in Orange, California. Hi, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. John, welcome.
Hi, Leo. This is John. I love your show. Question that I have is I have Chrome and Firefox, and the computer just shuts down automatically, and at any given time could be on for 2 minutes on either one of the two browsers, or it could be on for 20 minutes, and then it just goes through a you hear the hard drive clicking off, and then it just stops.
That's not good. And in fact, I have a computer that does exactly the same thing. In this case, it's a serious flaw, and the company's taking it back. It's often tied to overheating. If you notice, this happens more when you're doing more stuff, then maybe that's it. Like scrolling through a lot of images on the browser or running a. Do you ever play games?
No, do not.
Okay, because sometimes that will trigger it. It could be also a flaky power supply. And the power supply could be overheating or just triggering a reset. So there are a number of things that can happen. Frankie the Waffle in our chat room says it happens when he watches YouTube, and that happens to me too.
Yeah, it's happened there too.
Yeah, playing back video is challenging. So it could be, in fact, that. But it's hard to figure out what's wrong with it. Do you hear the fan ramp up before the shutdown?
No, you don't. You're working with the mouse, or you're moving the mouse, and then all of a sudden the mouse will freeze, and the next one you hear the hard drive go click, and the next one it's a black screen, and we're dead.
Yeah, boy, that sounds familiar. How long have you had the computer?
2 years.
So it's not in warranty anymore.
No, it is not.
Unfortunately. That is, generally speaking, a hardware issue. It's very hard for software to do this. It's a hardware issue. And that means it's hard to diagnose because it could be the power supply. It could be a fault in the memory modules. It could be a fault in the logic board. It's very difficult to solve this problem. And I know because, I've been having this problem. And the real problem is it's hard to bring it into a shop and say, see, watch. Because it doesn't happen consistently.
Right. I use iDrive and I back up on that. And when I did the drive the first time, it went for like 4 or 5 days, never stopped. But when I go into the browsers, that's where I only have the problems.
Maybe sometimes a driver can cause this. Check and make sure you got the latest video card driver. That's about the only software thing it could be. Otherwise, it's hardware. You're just going to have to bring it to a shop. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Kevin's in Los Angeles. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Leo. I love your show.
Thank you.
Like everybody else that listens.
Very nice of you.
You're very welcome. I've got a couple apps I want to get designed, but I don't know how to program things myself. my plan was just to look up a web design, app designer in town.
Yeah.
And go to them, and then usually just try to get a utility patent on it if it's a unique process.
So yeah. So and your goal is to sell this or to get the patent?
My goal is to probably actually try to license it to one of the phone companies.
Okay.
Phone manufacturer.
And it certainly is easier, although not required, but it is easier to get a patent if you have a prototype. But this is one of the controversial elements of software patents, is that you don't actually have to, build it. You could just say, hey, I invented swipe to unlock, and everybody, you must pay me. But it will certainly make it easier to get a patent if you can say more than just draw a sketch of it. You can say, and here's an implementation of it. They did. They used, in physical machines, they do require that. You have to bring them a machine. But with software patents, you just have to sketch out the algorithm and said, this is why we have so many lawsuits. Apple just launched a second lawsuit against Samsung for 5 patents. And to me, they seem fairly obvious. One of them is that when you get a text message or an email and there's a phone number or an address in it, it becomes a highlighted clickable link that will launch Maps or launch the phone thing. They patented that. So Samsung used it, so they're suing them. Swipe to unlock is another one. They say, hey, we invented the idea that you unlock the phone by swiping it. Samsung swiped that from us. And so they're suing him for $2 billion for these 5 patents. So this could be a very lucrative business. I am hopeful, because I'm not a fan of it, I'm hopeful that the patent law will be changed. But since it's not, makes sense to take advantage of it. Where do you get an app designer? It depends on whether you want an app to really work well. Or not. There are places like, and I would look at Elance.com. Elance.com is a place where people hire freelance designers, programmers, other technical people for this precise kind of thing. Often they're not in the U.S. You can get really good people in Russia and right. Eastern Europe. And these are people who were trained, very well trained in technical schools, but really haven't been able to find as much work as they'd like. So they're quite good. And quite affordable. A lot of people do that. Elance is a great place to start. Stack Exchange, also another good place where programmers frequent, and you can say to them, hey, I need somebody to design an app for me. My friend Kevin Rose, who created Dig, it's kind of a similar idea. Now, I have to point out, by the way, that ideas are kind of a dime a dozen. It's easy to have an idea. What makes an idea a reality is taking those extra steps. But you don't have to be a programmer or a designer to do it. It could be, just that you put together the team that did it. So Kevin wanted to do, he used a news site, very popular news site back in the late 90s called Slashdot, where people would vote up news stories. It's still around. It's a great site, Slashdot. And people would vote up news stories. And so you'd read the news and it would be human generated. He wanted to make something even more human generated. He had this idea. So he hired a programmer. He'd never met the guy. He met him online. He was out of Canada. And they created a site called Dig, which was quite successful for many years. And that's an example. Kevin's not a programmer. He has a good eye for design, but he's not a designer. But he put together a team to do it and became the CEO of the company. It was a startup and it was very successful. Byron says, I used Elance, and he's in the chat room, to find a developer and got hundreds of phone calls and emails outside of their official channels trying to trick me into not using the Elance method of hiring. In other words, people trying to bypass Elance. That's interesting. Byron, do you have another site you recommend if it's not Elance? That's the one I generally recommend. But there are many. And this is totally doable. It seems to me that since you're more interested in licensing it than you are in making a product, that the programmer doesn't have to be brilliant, right? Just somebody who can implement it. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. Tom in Riverside, you're next. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Leo. I have a problem with properties and folders on an XP machine. There's 310 files in the folder, but when I try to say click on it and get properties, it just comes up and tells me there's 283. When I go into the folder and right-click, select all, and hit properties, it tells me there's only 34 folders. And I'm physically looking, 34 files. And when I'm physically looking at the folder, it's full of the files. They're there.
I think you need to rebuild the folder. Is it Windows? What version of Windows?
That was the interesting part. It's XP, and it happened since yesterday, because yesterday I reconcile this my documents through three different computers every day. Everything was reconciled yesterday, and today they came up short in the XP machine. The two Windows 7 machines are fine.
Typically what happens is that in order to speed things up, Windows doesn't go through and do a count of files in that folder every time. It would just be slow to open the folder if it had to go through it and scan it. So it keeps and maintains an index of it. And if it got corrupted, then it might not work properly. You can rebuild the index. I'm not sure where it is in XP. In Windows 7, in the control panel, there's an indexing control panel, and you can say rebuild.
Okay.
I'm not sure where it is in XP, but that's kind of the idea.
Okay.
Windows copy is bad, too, by the way. We know this. In fact, it wasn't until Windows 8 that they really fixed it. And Microsoft's fix on XP in earlier versions before Windows 8 was to offer a better program for copying called RoboCopy that has fewer problems. The copy routine in Windows is broken. And obviously it's not going to be fixed in Windows XP.
A lot of things in Windows is broken.
Yeah, might be time to update if you can. There are third-party programs, too. XCopy is one that will do better jobs than... one of the problems with Windows copy is it doesn't apparently doesn't validate the copy. It just kind of... Again, trying to do it fast.
Okay.
And make it look, you know, make it look snappy. But sometimes to do that, you have to take shortcuts. So my guess is you see the files, right?
Yes, they're there.
And they're not hidden or otherwise marked system?
Well, there's actually a couple of files. When I right-click on them, I get a different download box, a dialog box. It just says open, print, open with, and send to. There's nowhere to collect, like to get properties.
Yeah. This sounds like there are some corrupt file systems. Have you refreshed the folder? There's in the folder menu itself, there's a refresh command.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, try that. But it does sound like, it frankly sounds like some of those files got damaged, which might well be tied to that.
That's why I keep like five local backups and I'm back.
Backup, baby. Backup is your friend. You got it. You got it. 8888 Ask Leo. Half an hour still to go. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, TerraCopy's good. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Going through the calls here. Let's see. Brian in Fountain Valley, California. You're next. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Leo. How are you today?
I am well. How are you?
I have to tell you, my wife and I are huge fans of your show.
Thank you.
Listen, I'm a real estate appraiser, and on rare occasions, I have to send photographs to my office from the field. To do that, I use an old Vista laptop along with Dropbox. Well, last week, Dropbox was acting up, so I reloaded it in the field. And in my car, I wasn't thinking, and I used one of those loaders
to
get Dropbox on. And
you didn't get it from Dropbox.com. You went to download.com or somewhere like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
Oh.
And I got search conduit on
All right.
So I shut everything off, and I went back to my office, and I went on to my Windows 7 desktop to search for what this thing was, the search conduit.
Yeah.
And it was on my desktop, too.
Yeah, it's adware. It's not technically malware.
Okay.
Because if you called it malware, they might get mad. I'll call it malware. But
how did it jump from one computer to the other? Did it go through Chrome or did it go through Dropbox?
No, it didn't jump. It might have gone. That's interesting. So you're saying you got it on your Windows 7 computer as well as the laptop.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that might just be a quinky-dink.
Okay.
It doesn't jump. It can't jump.
Okay.
That's an interesting question. It's interesting. Maybe when you install Dropbox with this installer, it puts it in Dropbox? That doesn't seem possible. So here's the deal. It's not really horrific. You can uninstall it. So
I looked everywhere.
There's no uninstaller?
All my restore points are gone and everything.
Oh, wow. Sounds like something more serious than just conduit. When you go to download.com, and I beg CBS to stop doing this. I beg you publicly, stop doing this. Download.com is owned by CNET, which is part of CBS Interactive. And they have decided that in order to make more money, they're going to wrap the downloads from this site. A lot of download sites do this now. Wrap those downloads with a wrapper that installs other stuff, adware chiefly, onto your system. Now, the reason we can't call it malware is it asks you. It might do it quickly, and it might do it in a way that's not obvious, but it does ask you, would you like to install this very handy Ask Me toolbar? And it's already checked. You just go, okay. And then the other reason we can't call it malware is because it has an uninstaller, and it's in the add remove programs or programs and features, and it's there, and it says, uninstall it, and you can uninstall it. And it uninstalls fairly cleanly. That means it's not malware. Now, Conduit normally is that way. It's a browser plugin, browser hijacker object. You should go in your Internet Explorer browser, and you turn it off. But the fact that you have other symptoms that are really malware symptoms, things like you can't uninstall it, you can't do restore points, sounds like you got more than just the traditional stuff. And
do
so,
I have to reload both systems?
I know how you got it. Use Chrome, don't you? Do you have your Chrome syncing?
Oh, that's it.
Yeah.
Yes, my Chrome is sunk both.
It's sunk. Your Chrome sunk. It sunk you. So Conduit installs as a Chrome extension. And, of course, in syncing, not only does Chrome sync the bookmarks, it syncs extensions. So that's how you got it on the new system.
Okay.
But you should be able to uninstall it because that's really just a Chrome extension. So go into Chrome and uninstall that extension. That should be it. It should be gone.
I did everything on the Internet that I was told. I took all the extensions off.
Yeah, it worries me.
Everything.
Yeah, that worries me.
Just with malware.
Malware Bytes is another good choice for this. Make sure you get you did it, and you still have it. Yeah, you got more than just Conduit.
Okay.
You
Do
got
I have
something
to reload
else.
Both systems at the same time?
I think not. I think Windows 7 only got it. The only way it could got, as far as I can tell, the only way it could have gotten it is as a browser synchronization thing. So remove it from the browser extensions on the Windows 7 machine. You're probably done.
I already did that.
And you still see other stuff? What do you see?
Every time I go to Chrome, the search conduit comes up.
It shouldn't. So go into Programs and Features. Make sure you've uninstalled anything that you don't know what it is.
Okay.
And then make sure that in Chrome that extension is not merely disabled but trashed.
Okay.
I think that at least on the Windows 7 machine, it should just be that.
Okay. If I do have to reload my system, when you say wipe the hard drive, is that an option that you're given? Because this is my first time doing it.
Yeah, it is, but it's not obvious. It's in the it's literally in the options. As you do the install, there's a point at which you're given options. You can load a disk partitioner and wipe the disk. You can also do it by hand beforehand with something like DBAN, just wipe the disk. That's not a bad idea, too.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, this is question. If you can't get rid of it doing all those things you did, you're going to have to reinstall. I'm sorry to say.
Okay.
Yeah.
One last question.
Yeah.
Can you recommend a wide angle camera? Because sometimes I have to take big properties when I'm in the field, and I need a wide angle.
A lot of cameras now, and certainly a lot of software, will do panoramas, which is going to give you maybe more of what you're looking for. So you're a realtor.
Yeah.
Do you ever do like the 360 tours and stuff like that?
No, I'm a real estate appraiser.
Oh, you're an appraiser. I get
a lot of photos of comparable properties.
Yeah. So there are a number of point and shoots like the Lumix that have 24 millimeter lenses. That's fairly wide. It's not super wide. You can only get so wide before you start getting barrel distortion, curvature, and weirdness.
Okay.
So 24 millimeter. The Sony RX100 has a, I think, 24 millimeter as well. That's about as wide as you want to go. If you go much lower than that, you're going to start getting distortion.
Okay. Leo, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Panasonic LX3 is an older one, But that you can get fairly inexpensively. I think they're currently up to the LX6 on the Lumix. That's really nice camera. Boy, do I like that camera. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you. There is
a link. We'll put this in the show notes on how to reset Chrome. Maybe that'll do the job for you. Maybe that'll fix. Oh, no, they've gone up to LX7, haven't they? Wow. Lou MM, who works at Microsoft and is in our chat room, he says, Conduit puts a scheduled task into Windows so that it reinstalls itself. This is horrific. It reinstalls itself when you reboot. Or even on schedule. Yeah, every once in a while. Let me just make sure that they didn't try to remove me. See, that makes it malware. That's malware. That's terrible. How depressing. I don't know if download.com installs Conduit. They install things similar to it. I just don't do that. Please, will you? If you can't make money doing a download service, don't. And the advice, and I know Brian knows this because I could feel it in his voice. He knew he did wrong. When you're downloading software, always get it from the company that made it. When you get Dropbox, don't go to download.com and get Dropbox. I know if you search for it, you'll see these download sites. Soft PDN download. Don't go to Dropbox and get it. You'll get the most recent version and you will, you know, you're less likely to have malware. Although, you know, I see Java now comes with various toolbars. Thank you, Oracle. It seems to be more and more common. And they make money. That's how they make money. Gina in Hollywood. Hi, Gina. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. So glad to speak with you and love your program.
Oh, aren't you sweet?
I am a religious person with your program.
Thank you. We'll have services every Sunday. Love you,
yes.
Too, Gina.
Yes.
Hang on a second. That was so nice, I'm blushing. I'm going to have to take a break. We'll come back right after this word.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gina. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK. Leo, last segment of the show. Gina's in Hollywood. Hi, Gina. Sorry to have to put you back on hold. What can I do for you now?
Hi, Leo. Thank you so much. Well, I was listening to the show last Sunday, and I did that procedure changing the administrator. I do have Windows XP.
Good.
And I tried to do it right. However, something screwed up.
Uh-oh.
And I now don't even have a connection to DSL Extreme.
Uh-oh. I'm going to have to come over, Gina, and fix this.
I don't have internet connection, and I don't have the landline. The power is on, and something else over there to the left on that modem is on, but no connection to DSL anymore.
Okay. When you log into the...
I can't get online.
Yeah. So what I've told people, and everybody should do this, is not to run as administrator daily on a day-to-day basis. You should have an administrator account and a standard user or limited user account. And normally, you only use that limited user account. So what my recommendation is, if you're using Windows XP or any version of Windows, is create an administrator account. Then downgrade the account you use all the time from administrator, because that's the default, but you don't want to run it that way, to limited user. So you did that. So you have two accounts on your system now, right?
Yes.
And if you log into the administrator account, are you able to get online?
No.
Huh. I'm not sure what happened there. Because sometimes it is the case, and this is why people don't do it, especially on XP, that some programs won't operate properly unless they are run as administrator. I found, for instance, Chrome is an example. You need to run it as an administrator for it to save stuff that it needs and so forth. I'm not sure.
And I don't have any files. Like, you know, there's nothing there.
Yeah, and I don't think that – I think it might be – you're not on Earthlink, are you?
No.
Okay.
I'm not.
They're down. Who's your DSL provider?
DSLExtreme.com.
And have you called them?
No, not yet. I didn't want to sound like a silly little old woman.
Oh, no, no. You tell them you're a friend of Leo's, and you called him on the show, and he said, you know, they should be able to to help you. So the first thing we want to make sure is that everything's working at DSL Extreme's end and that the modem is okay. And you're still in the original account that you had.
Yes.
You just downgraded it.
Right.
And so you're not using so DSL Extreme has its own software, but since you're in your original account, that software is still there, right? You can run it and everything.
I guess I don't know where the disk is, however.
Yeah, so it all just and this is kind of
when I started. I think I started a second account because I changed from the original to the one with the telephone, service, the bundle.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was years ago, and you set it up then, but you don't remember what you did or how. It's been working, and you haven't had to do with it. Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry. I hope that I haven't screwed things up.
No, I'm sure you did, and I'm sure it's me, because once I get excited and start working on things, I just jump from one thing to another trying to change and make
how you learn.
I'm sure it's me, because I do experiment,
I know you sound like you know what you're doing, which is good, and this is how you learn.
Yeah, that's all I'm trying to do.
Yeah. I'm just not sure, it's hard for me to tell exactly what happened. So everything is the same as it was. Your modem's on and all of that stuff. Do you see lights on the modem and all that stuff?
No, the lights on the modem are not all there. The LAN light isn't there, and the internet light isn't there.
Okay. You do need to make a call to DSL Extreme.
I got scared, and then I called put the wizard on, trying to doing an assessment and everything.
The LAN light goes on when you're connected to the computer.
Right.
So make sure your cables are properly connected. They actually should be on. The fact that that's not on worries me.
Yeah, I've done all the cables.
Yeah. I would call DSL Extreme. But I want you to get extra special help. So if they're not nice to you, you tell them Leo sent you. And if they're still not nice, if they go, who, then send me an email. You can't, because you can't get online. I feel terrible, Gina. If I were not in Northern California, I would be at your house in 5 minutes. Because
that would be great.
I feel terrible about this. Here's what I would do.
So dependent on the computer.
Of course
now.
You are. Who isn't?
My God.
So unplug. So what I would do is power down the DSL modem, shut down the computer, plug in and wait 15 seconds, then plug in the DSL modem, see if the lights come on, and then turn on the computer again. Log into your original account, the same password you've been using.
Right.
And then see if that helps. I think restarting everything might fix it.
Okay. And just one question may I ask? It's in that area that asks you the question, are you a Microsoft client? And then it's about the TCP, blah, 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 all that area. All those items are checked. Should they be?
I don't know. That's in the DSL Extreme software.
I really cannot.
Yeah, I think I now know what you did. I think you tried to put yourself on a Windows domain. So I think that is an issue.
Okay.
But I'm not sure exactly what to tell you to do here.
Okay.
It sounds like you've set yourself up more to be in an office than at home. So those check boxes, you just kind of said, yeah, and you checked them all. Yeah.
Well, they were all checked except
You're not on a Windows domain. So look at that and see if it says on you're not on a Windows domain.
Okay.
So that would actually stop you from getting online, because it's looking for the Windows domain.
Okay.
Make sure LAN is enabled, not disabled.
All right. It's disabled. LAN is disabled.
Let's
on my network connections. I told the lady that came on. I says I'm across the room from the computer, and my phone won't reach over there, so I cannot go over there and do anything.
I'm not sure what happened. Yeah, that's fine. I'm not sure what happened, but I'm thinking maybe in the settings that you put yourself. You said I'm on a Windows domain, and you're not. And so what it's trying to do is log you onto your office network, but you don't have an office network, so it's just stopping.
I also did something else you suggested, which was change. I stopped using Mozilla and I switched to Chrome.
Good.
I had Chrome before you had
suggested using Chrome this time, but someone had told me Chrome was very vulnerable, so...
No, Chrome's fine. No, Chrome's not vulnerable.
Okay, so I have Chrome now.
In fact, you have to use Chrome because Microsoft's not updating XP or Internet Explorer. You have a very old version, a very dangerous version of Internet Explorer. But Chrome, Google has said, we'll keep this up to date at least through 2015.
Okay.
So at some point, you may be a candidate for a new computer.
I was going to ask you this. I'm just looking around. You know, I really can't afford to go into debt.
Please don't go
really
into debt.
Really expensive thing.
How about an iPad or something like that?
I just bought a Kindle HD, which is dependent on...
Oh, that's nice.
No, this is the last year's version. It's not the new, the lightweight one. So you have to have internet connection, the new one.
Right.
You don't have to have it. But I just got through paying for that, so I'm not...
Oh, yeah, I don't want to spend more money. No, we'll get this. You might need to get somebody to come out.
Leo, tell me this.
Yeah.
If I purchase a model that would have Windows,
Don't get Windows, Gina, please.
Yeah.
I think that's making it overly complicated for you. What do? You surf the net? You do email?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
And banking, I do.
Banking.
Everything, actually.
Get a Chromebook, a $300 Chromebook. You'll never have this problem again.
$300 Chrome.
Yeah. But I would call right now, I would call DSL Extreme. Just tell them the symptoms and see if they can help you. Unfortunately, I have to run. I'm so sorry, Gina. Would you, Heather, get Gina's info so we can just stay in touch? Because I'm worried about her now. I think I've messed her up. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.